Okay, today is January 6th, and we are learning about God. Okay, now.
Okay,
let's get started. No problem.
Nothing?
You just need a knob. Okay. So, let's talk about what God has done so far in Bereishis and what he doesn't do in this generation. Because so far we've had God interceding and making choices, preferring one thing over another. He prefers Hevel over Cain. Right? The Bible doesn't tell us how they knew about that preference. It just says God respected Hevel's korban, he did not respect Cain's korban. Rashi just says that some cloud came over, I don't know, some function of how Hevel received some divine favor that Cain didn't. It was palpable, it was something you could just feel and experience, and Cain, lacking that experience, felt rejected. Now God is constantly making choices like this. He chooses Noah over everybody else. He doesn't like the rest of the world and threatens them. But Noach matzo chein b'nei Hashem. Noach was chein in God's eyes about Noach. This does not mean that God changed in any way. In other words, if you asked God, how do you feel about those other people? And God would say, oh, I feel really bad about that. And it really ruins my day. And you say, what do you think about Noach? Oh, Noach makes me feel great. God doesn't deal with those kind of emotions. That's for us. So Motzachain, as opposed to, you know, whatever everybody else was in God's eyes, that's what's called breaking the ear. You hear the Shpor et ha'ozen, Rashi says. It breaks your ear. In other words, for a human being to understand what God might be experiencing. God definitely expresses a will, right? So, of course, the problem is that God says, if you fulfill my will, you'll get your rain and your seasons, and if you don't fulfill my will, you'll get a drought. But very often in history, the opposite happens. Right? Mm-hmm. The Israelites in the second book of Kings and Malachim Bet were extremely wicked, but they were very successful in all their battles, and there was no famine until there was a famine, right? Mm-hmm. Until a few prophets predicted that if you continue in your ways, God is not going to suffer this behavior for too long with this kind of success. Because then it looks to you like God is happy with you, what you're doing, but he's not. In other words, the reward and the punishment does not always come, it hardly ever does, immediately. That kind of reaction would be a miracle, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. Every time I did a mitzvah, something $100 comes here. Every time I did an avera. So the way the Torah refers to reward and punishment in the Torah, this is how the Ramban formulates it, is a miracle. Right? But the world doesn't work on miracles. The world has its own order and its own plan. And the reason why it rains or it doesn't rain is not always tied up with the immediate reaction to what seems to be written in the Torah. Why does the Torah write it that way? The same reason why you tell a child, if you run out into the street when there's traffic, you will get hit by a car. Only cross when the light is green. If you run cross when it's red, you will get hit by a car. That's not a prediction, and it's not a punishment. It's a consequence. Keep running out in the street that way, and that's what will happen. Now, the problem is that the consequences don't always happen. The kid runs out 5, 6, 7, 10 times and says, see, I ran out every time. He's a liar. I don't trust anything else he says either. Right? Worse, what happens sometimes is that a kid is dutifully waiting for the light to change, and he's waiting for the light to turn from red to green, and the car jumps the curb and kills him. That's known in the Gemara as Tzadik Faralo. Right? You listened. And yet, as a direct result of listening, you came to harm. That's the world we live in, right? But so far, God has made clear choices. He took one man and he said, I want you to leave Mesopotamia and I want you to go down to Canaan. That was probably the worst advice to give anyone at that time. Canaan is famine and it's a war zone, right? And Abraham knows this, right? And yet he says, he goes. Okay? The famine entices him to leave, and he does. According to Rambam, a little too quickly, right? According to Rashi, he passes the test because he leaves without complaining. Different ways to read the same story. Okay? So Avram is God's clear choice, but when it comes to Avram's children, that choice is with Avraham. Or maybe not. That choice is with
Sarah.
Okay? So Sarah not only tells Avram whom to choose, she tells Avram whom to reject. And Avram objects and complains to God. He doesn't complain to Sarah because he knows he's not getting anywhere there. He complains to God. And God says, Shema B'Kola, which is how we derive that Sarah's prophetic abilities were superior to Avram's. She knew. Okay, so this is my introduction to today's presentation. When it comes to Yitzchak and Yishmael, God intervenes, or God is asked to intervene, and does. And he tells Avraham, she's right, do not put up a fight for Yishmael, because it's futile, because Yitzchak is your future. That's it. Actually, yesterday I saw this incredible short presentation about Chinese deities. Right, Taoism and Buddhism date back, according to Chinese theologies, to 5th, 6th century BCE. Okay? But Chinese history dates back 2,000 years before that. So they have their opinions and impressions of what the religion was before then. And this particular presentation was trying to show how it is remarkably similar to the Torah. In its monotheistic tendencies, as well as some of its prohibitions and commandments and things like that. So this is fully in concert with what Avraham does with all of his other children. What does it say? And I'm not dependent just on the Pasuk, I'm dependent on the Medrash that Rashi brings down.
To the east.
Right, it says right. He gave everything he had to Yitzchak, his legacy went to Yitzchak, and to all the other children, he gave gifts, matanot, and he sent them east. Right, Israel is pretty much what Israel is called, Marva. You know, it's called the West in the Babylonian Talmud. It's called Israel, the West. So everything else went east, and Rashi says he gave them koach hatuma. Koach HaTumah is like, you know, these meditative, you know, all these Eastern religion kind of things that apparently went east. Okay, good. That's where we are now. And now we have the next generation. So Yitzchak is, everything is settled, it's Yitzchak. Now, where is Yitzchak's legacy going? So it would appear that I refuse to understand the story that at the age of 123, or possibly 137, I think Yitzchak was 137 in this story, not 123, right? The reason why Rashi says he's 123 is because he builds into the system Yaakov spending 14 years at Yeshivat Shem Ve'ever, because there are 14 missing years. They're not 14 missing years. Yitzchak was 137 at that time, and if he's 137, I know exactly why he told Esav, I want to give you a bracha because I don't know when I'm going to die. Sarah. Remember what Rashi says? Rashi brings in Sarah, that he was 123, and when you get to within 5 years of a parent's age when they died, you should worry that you may die. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. That's crazy. Then he should have given the blessing a year earlier. I know how many years are between 127 and 123. Mm-hmm. He should have given the bracha a year before that.
Yeah.
Right? So, and furthermore, why would he think that it's his mother's year?
His father.
His father. Yeah. He lived within 5 years of his father, Taka.
Yes.
Avram lived 180, he lived to be 175.
Sure.
Right? So, but why would Yitzchak really feel that he may die when he reached the age of 137?
Maybe because it was a sacrifice for them.
Who was 137 when he died in the Torah? Who dies at the age of 137 in the Torah? Now there are a few people in Shmos who do, but in Bereshis, it's Ishmael. His brother died at 137. So I get the thing about parents, but if you reach the age where your brother died, I understand you might think, you know, my time maybe now also. Let's do this. Okay, so he now wants to give over his legacy. I refuse to accept that for the first time, if he's 137, that means he's married 97 years. Okay? 97 years. Rivka's still alive, right? She's in on this, right?
90-something.
Okay. So, if they're married almost 100 years, you don't think it's inconceivable that these two never talked about what the Yerusha is going to be and what we're leaving for each of our kids and what kind of lives they're leading and how we're going to pass on the legacy of my past and. And everything that was you know, you remember when that man came to get you, who was my master's, Eliezer, who came. So surely they discussed this. All right, we know how this was last week's presentation. We know how it ended off. The question I'm asking you is as follows. God does not intervene this time. Right? Does not intervene. He doesn't inform Yitzchak or Rivka that Yaakov Yikarei L'Chozera, right? Chazal say, Be Yitzchak V'lo B'Kol Yitzchak. So not every child of Yitzchak is going to follow you, Avraham. So just want to let you know that. But that's a nice drash, but there is no place where God intervenes and tells both Yitzchak and Rivka, you know, it's a good thing Yaakov did this because, you know, he's... It's not going to be Edom or Esav, it's going to be Yaakov. So, but also, this is what I presented to you last week as well, is that by God leaving the message to the pregnant Rivka to be quite nebulous, remember the three words?
Mm-hmm.
Rav Ya'avot Sa'ir. To leave that quite nebulous, so that Rashi and Dasakanim and the Chizkuni and other Meforshim can actually argue over what these three words mean. Come on, God, you know, I don't speak Hebrew as well as you do. I don't do anything as well as you do. So I could come up with a more clear, definitive Hebrew statement that means the older will serve the younger. That would be Habachor Ya'avot
Tzair.
Probably Et Hatzair or something like that. But it's the way that the three words are formulated leave open such diversity of commentary over what it actually means. All right, you don't have to give an oracle to say that the younger will serve the older. Right? Some say V'rav Ya'avot Tzair. The older one shall the younger serve. No, I don't need an oracle to tell me that. Maybe in Bereshis I do, because in Bereshis the younger one always seems to prevail. But you know, was it the oracle that convinced her whom to favor? Right? Wouldn't it more likely be just the way they were being raised and the way they were growing up? The one who goes out and hunts is going to be favored by the father. The one who stays at home and is Sheva Olim is going to be favored by the mother. At least at that time.
It's also because he married Yasser was by 40 years old. He married the Marot Ruach Rivka Yitzchak.
Yeah, when Yitzchak, you know, that Moras Ruach is 37 years before this. He's an Oisvarf.
Yes.
He's not giving us, Right? No, Nachas Ruach is the opposite of Moras. So Yaakov isn't giving us grandchildren at all, right? At least he's giving us grandchildren if they're not Jewish, but they're right. Okay, but so this is the presentation for this week, is that Hashem doesn't step in between Yaakov and Esav the way he stepped in between Yitzchak and Yishmael in Bereishis Perek Chaf Aleph. Okay? So here is the question I pose to you. Right after Yaakov leaves home, The Torah uses a parav word, a relatively parav word. I say parav because the Haftorah for that Shabbos, right? I want you to look at the first words of the Haftorah for that Shabbos, which is in Hosea. So open up to page 1340. Six. You'll see it on the page. It says Haftarat Vayetze. Mm-hmm. So Vayetze begins Vayetze Yaakov. Yes. Yaakov, what is Vayetze? As I said, it's a power of word because it means he left. He went out. Yotzov and Nichnas as he comes in. Yotzov, he went out. Right. But the prophet Hosea, mm-hmm. when listen to this, is really a very very important to experience what the prophet is doing. At the time of Hosea, there was a mortal threat from Aram, due north, and further north from Ashur. Okay, Assyria, which would be like today Iran and Iraq, and due north was what we call Syria, Damascus, right? Now, while Ashur represented the much greater threat, they didn't hide their desire to actually destroy, conquer, and take over Israel. Aram is right to your is on your borders. So Aram is, but what's interesting at this time, Aram actually wanted a non-aggression pact with the northern tribes because they also feared Ashur. It's a little different than the geopolitical situation today because today Ashur and Aram, you know, Syria, you know, Iran and Syria are one and the same. Right, so so Aram, but Israel is the prophets Hosea and Yeshayahu, by the way, chapter 7 and Sefer Yeshayahu, warns about any kind of peace pact that you would make with Aram. They don't mean you're good; they only mean you harm, and putting your lot with them is dangerous and actually will destroy you. So Hosea, what Hosea is doing is what many rabbis today do. Like when, if we feel a threat from Iran, what's the ancient Iran? Is Persia. Haman, so some leader of Persia today is Haman. And what happened to Haman will happen to these leaders. You get it? Yep. So Hosea is doing the same thing. He's saying that Yaakov had some grave dangers with the same nation, Aram, due north. Right? But he somehow God had him, and I think actually that what Hosea is doing is more clever than the simplicity I'm mentioning here, because what's the name of the enemy in Parshas Vayetze? The Haggadah has him as the archenemy of Lavan, Arami Oved Avi, Lavan, right?
Yes.
What's the name of the enemy in Parshas Vayishlach when Yaakov is closer to home?
Esau,
but what's Esau's other name?
Seir Edom.
Edom, right? So what's the contrast between Lavan and Edom?
White and red.
Right?
Yeah.
So Lavan, you don't really see in the... He threatens Yaakov and he says, you know, I could really do you harm.
Yeah.
Really? He's going to kill all his grandchildren? But you don't really see it. Arami Oved Avi is hidden. You don't really see it. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, we have to grapple. In what way did Lavan bekeish Lavan lakor sakol? By killing all of his grandchildren, really? That's what he was going to do? All right, but he's the villain of the Haggadah because of that, those psukim about the Bikurim. So, but Lavan's hatred is Lavan.
Secretive.
He comes to a meeting with a suit on, with your destruction at hand, right? Like we used to compare, Fatah is Lavan. Chachmas is Edom. You know, one is red with blood in his mouth and his teeth, and he wants to bite you and destroy you. And love the other one comes to you, you know, with a peace pact, but in his own language, he's telling his people, "This is the peace of Salah ad-Din, and we're gonna get them weak, and we're gonna destroy them." So that's if that's what Hosea is doing, that's extremely clever, right? Okay, so. It means that just as Yaakov faced an enemy that's white and want to make peace. So we also face an enemy that's trying to make peace with us, you know, and say non-aggression pact against Asher, and we'll work it out. Okay? That's very brilliant. But look at the word that Hoshea uses for Yaakov leaving town. Ah, Yaakov. Now, Yaakov has to leave home for two reasons.
Which verse?
Look at where it says, Haftarat Vayetzeh.
Chapter 12, verse 13.
Yeah,
okay,
I'm
looking. Yeah. Yaakov.
So, the Torah...
He's running away from
me. Now, the fact is that when Rivka confronts him and says, Yaakov, your brother wants to kill you about this. Mm-hmm. Right? So he says, she tells him, Ve'ata kum brach lecho. He doesn't say, Tsei alavon achicha. He says, kum brach lecho. He apparently didn't have time to pack a good bag. I hope he didn't leave his tefillin behind, but he forgot to take money with him. He didn't even have a gift to give the girl, right? So Rashi says he was robbed on the way, but okay, but he says she tells him kum brach lecha, you have to escape, your life is in danger, and then you see she'd much rather not give her husband that reason for Yaakov having to leave town. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have a lot of time. She's so brilliant. She's she's a wheeler dealer herself. Right? So she knows what she has to do, and she goes up to Yitzchak. She must have been a great chess player, and she not only tells him a different reason for Yaakov to have to leave the house, because I could picture Yitzchak, but Yitzchak might have been out of it. Yitzchak says, why does Yaakov have to leave to find a wife? Finish my sentence. Let him
go with Bashar Ishmael's daughter.
No, better than that. Yeah, let him get a wife the same way I got you. You know, and this time it should be easier. Maybe Eliezer's still alive. No, it's easier now, because now we don't have to send someone to make a deal at a well. We know where to go. She tells him, "Go to Lavan Achi and find maybe you can make some kind of deal there with someone." Right. The shidduch, you know, we always like to say that Yaakov made his own shidduch, but the shidduch was sort of made with the family. Now you pick which one, you know, you go, you figure, you find one there, right? So Yitzchak might have said something like, you know, favus, you know, why do we have to go up and then send him away? I have a chavrusa with him, you know. I want him to stick around, you know. It's bittul Torah of him to go. And she said, no, he should go up. Let him go up. I don't, you know, who knows? Let him just go up. She knows she has to get him out of the house quickly. Mm-hmm. Right? Now, the fact is, Esav said, Yakum Abel Yitzchak Aviva Hargos Yaakov Achi.
He wouldn't do it when Yitzchak.
Not going to do it when my father's still alive. And Yitzchak still has, 43 good years in him. Right? Did I say that Yitzchak died 175 and Avram 180? It's the opposite. Yeah. Avram was 175, Yitzchak was 180. Right, so Yitzchak has got plenty of years left in him, right? So Esav is not going to care. By the way, this is a sentiment that Yosef's brothers did not share. Mm-hmm. Right, this aspect of saying, you know, it's not a very kind thing to say. As soon as my father dies, I'll kill my brother. But at least it's kinder than what Yosef's brothers came up with, right? And also, I might have said this some weeks back in Vayishlach, when it says that. You know, Yaakov sends a message, goes, listen, I'm coming home now after all these years. I got a wife, I have lots of kids. And I don't want to just sneak by. I'm on my way. Right? Now, do you think that Esav gave a response to that? Instead, the messenger just came back and said, we came up to your brother, and he's coming to greet you with 400 men. Yeah. So Ramban says Esav purposely didn't say a thing. I'm coming to greet you, Yaakov. I want you to
feel.
I want, you know what? Maybe it's your turn. Your turn to get some, you know. In other words, I don't want to kill you. First of all, Daddy's still alive, right? Second of all, the paper is going to say, Esav and his army kills limping brother with a bunch of children. Yaakov had just fought with the angel and he was limping, right? That's not a good fight. Let him come with his 400 men and I'll give him a good fight. But this is not, I'm not going to kill women and children.
No challenge
in that.
So
Chizkuni says, Esav has no intention to kill him, but he wants to let Yaakov know that he could. Right? And Yaakov definitely, Yaakov has to be very, very diplomatic about saving his family in case Esav wants to kill them, and not making him think that he thinks I want you to. I think you may kill them in case he doesn't, right? Right. So this is when it says Vayira Vayetzer Lo. So Rashi says Vayira, he was afraid he may get killed. Vayetzer Lo, he's afraid I may have to kill. I don't want to kill either. Right? Remember Golda Meir? I can forgive the Arabs for wanting to kill my boys. They want the land, right? But I can't forgive them for making my boys go in the army and kill. Well, on the other side. So the Chizkuni says Vayira Vayetzer Lo means the reason he was afraid because of the present danger. Mm-hmm. But Vayetzer Lo, mommy said he would not kill me unless daddy had died. Either he changed his mind about that,
or
maybe daddy died and no one ever told me. By the way, I mean, Rashi says this outright. It's a medrash that Rivka died. He didn't even know. Mm-hmm. He came home and
never saw her.
Never saw her again. She never saw him.
That
he did not come. He did not come home just to find Rivka. Yeah.
That was sort of a punishment, wasn't it?
Yeah,
get to see him.
Well, it's a consequence, I guess you might say. But yeah. In defense of Rivka, she really felt that this was the will of Hashem with the oracle, and I do believe that Yaakov told his mother that I don't know if he ever told. I don't know. Maybe Esav swore him to secrecy. I'll sell you my birthright, but you can't tell anybody. Well, hello, I should be telling Daddy. No, right. Okay, anyways.
Is it possible that the birthright and the blessing are separate? That the blessing is a blessing being given and the birthright is the two portions?
Physically, I'm wondering.
I'll tell you why I think I have evidence to the contrary. Because of the preponderance of the word b'chor in the beginning where he calls him over and he says, you know, there's so much b'chor gani, anuchi b'chisa b'chorecha. Right? It seems to be that this is a b'chor right that he's getting. He's not just giving him a bank account or something, or a deed to a house or something. He's giving him
right,
yeah. Which Yaakov doesn't mention in his objection. He goes, you know, mommy, you're right. I should do this because I purchased it from him. You know, that's sort of in the background. Something that Esav brings up, actually, with his father.
Yeah.
Why, you know, by Yakveni Zep HaMayim. Okay, so here's the question I present to you after all this introduction. God does come to him after Vayetze Yaakov, Be'er Sheva, Vayelech Harana. So, okay, I understand why I have the double expression. He had to leave Be'er Sheva because his brother wants to kill him. Vayelech Harana, because he's got to get married.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two reasons for leaving, and the Bible is kind to him by using the word Vayetze.
Instead of Vayelech.
The prophet that we studied this prophet last week, if you recall, when he referred to Yaakov being Akev, his brother. Did this, remember, we looked at it last week, and we looked at some pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Ki kol och Akov Yaakov. So the chutzpah from these Nevi'im to refer to the treachery of the Israelites here, of the ten tribes, and Yirmiyahu of Yehuda. And both of them use the word Yaakov together in the same pasuk as the word Mirma. What does that word remind you of? Right? So which Targum translates as Bechuchmasa, because Yaakov did this cleverly. Right, so Hosea 12, Yirmiyahu 9, these are Psukim, I believe we can just psukim in Yirmiyahu. Psukim in Yirmiyahu, if I can just turn you to a little further back. Yirmiyahu chapter 9, which would be page 1094. Mm-hmm. Actually, you want to look at 1092. Mm-hmm. 1092. And he's speaking about the treachery of the people in his time. And he's saying they're so treacherous that you can't even trust a brother. Because your brother also wants to survive. He wants his kids to survive. So he's going to cheat you and he's going to take the loaf of bread from your house because his kids are starving. You can't trust anybody, not even a brother. Look how he expresses that in Pasuk Gimel. Perek Tes Pasuk Gimel on page 1092. Ish mirei ehu hishamiru. Ve'al koloch al tivtachu. Watch out, guard yourself from your neighbor. Trust not even a brother. Why not? Ki koloch akov yakov. Ve'chol rea rochil yahaloch. Ve'ish breyeu yaseilu ve'emes lo yedaberu. Limdu l'shonam daber sheker ave nilu. Shiftecha besoch mirma b'mirma me'anu daso sinu mashem. Right, they're all, everyone is treacherous, everyone's lying, everyone is Yaakoving each other. And then he works that word mirma into there. What's interesting is that the entire Talmud, whenever the Gemara wants to tell you that lying is wrong, this is the pasuk they quote. Not from the Torah, Midvar Sheker Tirchak or Lo Tishakru, which is understood by the Talmud to refer to a court case. In court, don't ever lie under any circumstance. No matter how much you think it's justified. Outside of court, sometimes you're allowed to lie to justify a shalom or stop not to hurt someone's feelings. Okay? So whenever the Gemara says, but except with one exception, when the Gemara says in Suvis about telling a bride how beautiful you think she mm-hmm. is, right? It says, well, Beis Shammai says, but and even there, Beis Hillel says, "No, you don't have to. You can tell her if she's beautiful, even if you don't think so." All right. So anyway, so Yirmiyahu takes note of the fact that Yaakov did something wrong here. Mm-hmm. So we've done also, I believe, that the narrative that follows almost immediately makes it abundantly clear in story after story that Yaakov looked back at that unfortunate day and maybe didn't say, I wish I can go back to that day and do something else. But he regretted it. Now, this is an important point. It's an important theological point. And it's in the Zohar that says that Yaakov had to do what he did. He justified it, and if he would go back to do it again, he would do it again. But still, he has to be punished for it. Because almost everything we do is a balance. If you could be 52 right and 48 wrong, you're still a tzaddik, a tzaddikus, right? Some things are 85 and 15, some things are 98 and 2. There's very little downside to what you're doing, and those are great, right? But whatever we do, there's usually some kind of balance on the other side. Listen to my mother and deceive my father. Maybe I can convince my mother that I shouldn't deceive my father. So he tried to tell him, I don't want to be cursed. She talked him out of thinking that you won't be cursed. I gave you the different pshatim to that last week. But why couldn't Yaakov say something like, and I'm not saying I'm more... I have more morality. I'm not in the scene. I'm not in the situation. I'm not Esau's brother. But why not say something like, Mom, if you're telling me this is my destiny to have this bracha of Talos Shemayim and Shemane Aretz, which is why Jews do well when given equal opportunity because of this bracha, right? If you really read Brachos right, it means that we, Baruch Hashem, as a community, not every one of us maybe, but as a community, we tend, wherever we go to the neighborhoods where Jews live, we do well, right? It's because of Rivka. And maybe, just maybe, Yaakov could have said this. Mom, I appreciate that you think that I can do this. I feel a little nervous because I think Daddy will catch me. But if you say you have a plan with Ace of Skins and then give him, he asked for tzayid, which is venison, and you're giving me goat meat, isn't that going to tip him off? She goes, don't worry, I can put in enough curry to make him think it's, I don't know, he'll think it's deer meat. Right? The two don't really taste alike, but okay, maybe she knew how to make them taste alike. So Yaakov can say, you know, Mom, you know, I think you're right. I did bargain for this when we were younger, right? I purchased this, and the Yetzer Hara is starting to kick in, and he's saying, yeah, I think I can do this. Yeah, maybe, maybe it is the right thing for me to do, right? But how about this statement? Maybe something like, Mom, if you're so sure I'm supposed to get this bracha, I'm going to get it. And if I'm not supposed to get this bracha, I certainly don't want to take it by subterfuge. Because it's bad enough for me to take the bracha through subterfuge when I'm supposed to get it. It would really be ruinous to my legacy, right, as the linchpin of this great nation, right? My grandfather, my father, your husband, and me, right? Starting off with an act with needing such atonement, right? What if Yaakov had said that? Mom, I refuse. I'm not going to do this. Mom, I'm going to take the high road. If you're so sure I'm supposed to get this blessing, I'm going to get it. If you're not so sure, I'm not doing this. That's what happens.
I was going to say, but maybe what it is you can make the argument that in the grand scheme of things, you have to learn in life that there are certain circumstances you just have to use a subterfuge. Even if, you know, you could argue for it, there's a straightforward way, but even life is not so simple. So even if it's your dad and you have to lie to your dad because your mother told you to do so, you just have to...
I think you are correct philosophically. In Jewish philosophy, in Jewish law, you are correct. If anyone has ever studied Immanuel Kant and his categorical imperatives, he would disagree with you, but we're not Kantians here. We're Torah Jews, right? The Torah allows us the leeway, and frankly, it's a compliment to us. It allows us the discretion to determine when I have to do something that's 60-40, you know. Kant only wants the 90-10 and the 98-2, right? So that is an important point to make. But one can't deny that in the following stories, Yaakov is haunted by this.
I mean, there may be consequences.
Correct.
Obviously, and maybe
it's exactly the Zohar.
Maybe he could have done a Kiddush Hashem, and you know, like. Even if this was, let's say, Ratzon Hashem, but maybe there was a Kiddush Hashem for him to do, and I don't know, his brother better.
I think it's the perfect way to say it. I wouldn't say it's a punishment that he falls in love with the older one, and gets the older one, right? He falls in love with Rachel, but gets Leah, and then, you know, she says, you know, he says, how could you do this to your sister? And you didn't do something like this to your brother? You know, it's very snarky, but maybe this is why he started hating her. You know, she was she reminded him of what he should have been telling himself, right? And then you know, when the two girls are always called Ketana and Gedola, and here they're called Tzira and Bechira, just at the moment when Lavan is Lo Yasekein Bimkomeinu, in our place, we don't put the younger before the older in our place. I read the papers about why you had to leave home. Right? Right? Mistama Yaakov told him, because it says in the beginning of the parsha when he first arrived, because Yaakov told him all that happened. He might have told him, yeah, he said, listen, you might get a visitor from my brother. I don't need a visit from my brother. You may want to come and see what's going on. So just want to keep you posted. So that is that's what's happening to Yaakov. So the closing of this is that, in my book that's just coming out now, you can go to Kodesh Press and order it, by the way. It's called Conflict Resolution in the Books, in the Early Prophets. Mm-hmm. And the book is about places in the Nevi'im Rishonim where there is a flagrant violation of the Torah. But if you didn't know the Torah law, you wouldn't know that there's anything wrong. Nothing, it passes, there's nothing wrong in the whole story. So I have a special section where God tells someone to violate the Torah. That's not a problem. The deity is God, not the Torah. Mm-hmm. If God tells someone to offer a korban outside the Ohel Moed, to offer a sacrifice, and the person is not a Kohen, and he's not doing it in the right place, and he's making all kinds of, God tells Gidon to violate something like the Gemara in Tumor says 8, and another Medrash says 10 of the Torah's violations regarding animal sacrifice. So that's not a problem. God said, I want you to do this. In other words, I'll give another example of this. How do we know that Cain's carbon was not as good as Hevel's? What? How do you know it?
Because God
accepted Hevel's and he didn't accept Cain's. Now, is there any textual basis for this? Yes, I think there is. B'choro tzono, as opposed to not miracious priyadma. Doesn't priyadma so, it says b'choro tzono. All right, there's textual basis. But I don't want to second guess God. Right? Now, it's not always fair to judge people this way. That's what Eov's friends did to Eov. Mm-hmm. You want to be more righteous than God? Right? Eov's saying, you're telling me you know me better than I know me. I know I didn't do these things. Right? To deserve what's happening to me. And I know my children didn't do it. But here is the, how we've been building up to this. Right after Yaakov leaves home, look what happens. Turn to the beginning of Vayetze. Back to page 66. Yeah.
The beginning of the
fire. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 66.
Okay. As soon as he leaves his house, Yaakov has what ostensibly seems to be his first prophetic vision.
Yep.
He's 77, he's a few years older than Avraham when he's told to leave his home. Right? Yitzchak's first prophetic vision, at least as far as the Torah goes, is where God tells him not to go down to Egypt during the time of the famine. Right? Some of Farshim say that happened before Yaakov and Esau were born. Mm-hmm. Can you prove it? The Torah is out of order there.
Because the same is his sister. So if they have a sister, how can they be like children?
Yeah, what's with the kid? If they were walking around with these two twin boys,
yes,
then Avimelech would know that they're not brother and sister. The two boys were not born yet.
No.
What made Avimelech think that they're husband and wife was when he was peeping Tom in through the window, and then
okay.
Whatever that is, yeah. All right, so
the kids were home in the tent,
No.
The field.
Could
boys,
be, I don't know.
Teenager boys in the tent, forget about it.
No, they weren't teenagers.
No. Okay, so Yitzchak receives a divine visit quite early. Yaakov receives his first divine visit much later than everybody else. So he falls asleep and he sees this a vision that he interprets as God. Okay. And Vayamaran, and Hashem is on the top of the ladder,
yeah,
with the angels, and Hashem tells him something. Mm-hmm. He's sleeping. I mean, this is not, I don't know, it says he's sleeping, because he wakes up afterwards. And God has quite a long speech for him.
Yeah.
And at no point does he tell him anything of rebuke about what drove him to this situation.
Yeah.
Right? I think Yaakov is in great dire straits right now. This is why we say Rosh Hashanah time in Slichas, Misha ona Avraham bekiv shan ha'esh hu yanenu. The one who answered Avraham when he was thrown into a furnace, yet he lived. Please God, answer us. We get thrown into furnaces all the time. Answer us. We need you just like Avraham did. Misha ona li Yitzchak be'akeda hu yanenu. Whoever answered Yitzchak when the knife was at his throat, And he gave up his life already and thought, I'm going to die. He said, Shema Yisrael, and he lived. And what's Yaakov? Misha Amal Yaakov Beveidel Hu Yanenu. What? He was out at the campfire. He was having a nice time with his buddies. Who knows? They're telling stories. What? He's out in Beitel, outdoors, and he's sleeping, you know. What's the big tzara here? The big tzara may be worse than theirs. I'm 77 years old. I'm supposed to be a part of a big legacy for in the world. I don't have a wife. I don't have a job. I don't have a home. And I'm a fugitive. And I may not even make it to my destination. No wonder why we say Tfilas Arvis is Rishos. Right? I said this yesterday. If Yaakov had asked his Orthodox, local Orthodox rabbi, listen, I need to daven Maariv. Can I daven here? You know, Veifka b'makom, v'yalon sham kiva shemesh, because I'll learn that Yaakov daven is misakin Maariv here. And he would say, no, you better just don't daven. You keep running.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm tired. I want to go to sleep. You know, okay, well, just go to sleep. Don't waste any time. Just go to sleep. When you wake up, just keep moving. Right? So he's in a very, very bad emotional state here. I mean, he needs to feel some kind of support. And Hashem gives it to him. It's a beautiful, beautiful, kick in the He gives him a real good push, a shove to be. Listen, Yaakov, you will reach your potential. All right, you just have to change your name. And that's what's going to be next week. So we're not here next week, but the shir is going on. The Tanakh shir, but not the Yerushalmi shir. And 2 weeks from tonight, we are back. We'll be back for that. So just 1 week, someone else is giving. I'm going to instruct him to give the shir for how God appears in Vayishlach. But then he's not going to appear in Vayishev, Niketz, and Vayigash until Yosef is Yaakov learns that Yosef is alive. So, okay. So, Vayishlach is for next week, and I will instruct the institute. Rabbi Varon is going to give the shir. And he likes doing Bereshis. So
Marv is upstairs.
Yes.